From the Moan Broadcast Center, this is an abbreviated film week. I'm Larry Mantle. This week, our critics review The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. It's a new anthology film from the Coen brothers. We'll lead off with The Grinch, the animated comedy starring Benedict Cumberbatch, and The Girl in the Spider's Web. It's a briefer than typical film week because of our fire coverage Friday on 89.3. Movie reviews coming right up.
KPCC podcasts are supported by the Netflix film The Other Side of the Wind. Witness the last film from legendary director Orson Welles, a cinematic event 40 years in the making. The Other Side of the Wind, streaming now only on Netflix.
You're listening to a special edition of Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're covering the very latest developments in the Woolsey Fire, where tens of thousands of Southern Californians are under evacuation. We'll have the very latest for you, and as news comes in on it, we'll bring you up to date. But our critics are here, and we just want to take a moment to review a few of the films that are out this week, just give you a sense of those. Then we're back to our fire coverage on 89.3. Joined by critics Tim Cogshell, Charles Solomon, and Claudia Puig. Let's start with The Grinch, the animated comedy starring Benedict Cumberbatch. It's directed by Yarrow Chaney and Scott Mosier. Charles, what'd you think of The Grinch?
Well, it's about four times as long as the classic Chuck Jones special and has about a quarter of the charm. Part of the problem is there simply isn't a feature's worth of story in The Grinch. It's short, so they have tried to add padding where they think they're sounding like Dr. Seuss. They don't. They've given the Grinch a backstory that he doesn't like Christmas because he was an orphan as a Grinchlet, and now it reminds him of being lonely. You don't need the backstory. Cindy Lou Who is now the spunky little daughter of a single working mom, and she needs to talk to Santa to make things better for her mother. She's only two. They've also added a fat reindeer that tries to help the Grinch, and a goat that screams every time you see it, just like the chicken in Moana. It wasn't funny in Moana. It's not funny here. What they've also added, they've added scope to it. Huge vistas and things falling, and Whoville looks like Dr. Seuss decided to design a Lido de Paris show in Vegas. It's so big and overblown. But what you lose is the charm and the heart of the story, which is that Christmas isn't something that comes from a store. Christmas means something more, and you don't get that.
Tim?
Yeah. Look, the doctor's out. That's just the problem here, ultimately. And I got to tell you, I was disappointed in what Benedict Cumberbatch didn't do, I suppose, the way you would say it, with that voice. I just wanted something. You know, Tim, I love him. But it's all just so ordinary, and it just didn't have any sort of foreboding about it or anything like
or
that.
Or menace.
And all of this sort of new neo-Seussian dialogue that isn't. You know, I mean, you can't write like him, so don't try. Because you're just going to mess it all up. You put in that Chuck Jones special.
Mm-hmm. Which is great.
And you're done.
Yeah, just watch it.
The Grinch, in wide release, starring Benedict Cumberbatch, Michael Lesur, and Tommy Swerdlow are the screenwriters of the film. It's rated PG. The Girl in the Spider's Web is in the series of books by Stieg Larsson, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Claire Foy stars in The Girl in the Spider's Web. It's directed by Fede Alvarez. Claudia?
I liked this. I probably liked the other two better with Rooney Mara and Noomi Rapace, but I think Claire Foy did just as good a job as the two of them. I think there isn't much she can't do to go from playing Queen Elizabeth in The Crown to this, and then in between she was in she played Neil Armstrong's wife in
First
that
Man.
Thank you, First Man, and I think she sells it for me. It's a little less complex. I think it has kind of the same moody, atmospheric feel that the others have had, maybe a jot less. They added Lakeith Stanfield as an NSA expert, as an NSA operative or whatever, and I think that was a good addition. The story is a little contrived.
Oh.
I know you didn't like it as much as I did, but I actually appreciated her performance.
And Lakeith, all good actors around doing acting, doing the things that they are forced to do by this dumb script. This has more to do with like a Bourne movie than it does an actual those Stieg Larsson films that millennial trilogy. Those are really, really good, and it was really about her family,
right,
and all of that
kind
of stuff.
It's her backstory.
Yeah, it's a lot of backstory going on there.
Childhood.
This they have to, they devise to sort of. He didn't write this. Stieg didn't write this, and then they wrote this stuff. This is the thing that bugs me most about it, though. I will allow a moment of happenstance in any movie. You get one. One moment of happenstance.
That's all you get?
You only get one.
Not even two?
Yeah. Not two. Sometimes genre films, I'll give two.
Okay.
This movie has 45 ridiculous moments of happenstance. I'll give an example of one. They're stuck. They don't know what to do. The case is, they can't figure out what's going on. And the reporter that she works with in all these films, he's drinking a highball. And he finishes his highball, and he puts the glass down on a photograph that happens to be there that they've been working on. And he looks through the bottom of the glass, and because it's a highball, it magnifies this little spot on this spider on this guy's shoulder. And he's like, oh. And he pulls, and of course, this turns out to be the most important possible evidence. It's a gang tattoo. And I'm like, man, if he hadn't put that drink down right there, this movie's over. This dumb things like that happen over and over and over again in this movie. And I found it infuriating.
Well, it was not written by Stieg Larsson.
No.
And it was written posthumously. And I think Stieg Larsson's partner has said that David Lagercrantz, who wrote it, did terrible things to it. So there is some debate about this story.
And we should mention Lagercrantz wrote the book that then this is based. So the characters Larsson created, Lagercrantz wrote did the book, and then the screenplay by Stephen Knight, the director, Fede Alvarez, and Jay Basu.
So we're a couple of generations away.
Yes, from the girl. This is the girl in the spider's web we're talking about in wide release. It's rated R. The latest from the Coen brothers is an anthology film, six parts, the Western, the Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the cast including James Franco, Tim Blake Nelson, Brendan Gleeson, Zoe Kazan, Liam Neeson, and Tom Waits. Tim?
So good. So funny. Insanely violent. A throwback to early Coen brothers. We're talking Hudsucker Proxy, Barton Fink.
Even Blood Simple.
Even Blood Simple, particularly when you talk about the violence that's going on. Tim Blake Nelson plays the title character in the first segment. Again, very, very funny, singing these ridiculously funny songs. He's a cowboy. He rides into town as a gunslinger. They're not all even, these things, but every one of them works in one way or another. They're all really funny, and they're all insanely violent.
Yes, I think you hit on something. They're not all even. I think that it gets better as it goes. The last couple ones I thought were better. I see it like a concept album. The concept is the Western, and some of those you like some of the tracks better than others. But I like that when you think about how much, recently with True Grit and No Country for Old Men, they have been exploring the West and sort of this is kind of a reimagining of the West and looking at sort of how we've mythologized it, romanticized it, and how it really, the darker underpinnings of that mythologizing. There's some great performances. Zoe Kazan is really good as this sort of slightly lost pioneer woman. I thought Tyne Daly was amazing. Some of the expressions on her face. She's in a stagecoach. It was almost like a play. There's the final segment is Tyne Daly, Brendan Gleeson, and I think two or three other people all sitting in a stagecoach writing. And that it all takes place there, so it's very confined. And she's next to this, what was he? He was like a prospector.
Yeah.
And you could tell that he looked like he smelled bad and she's making these faces, but it's all very subtle. And her reaction and their reactions to her, and then someone breaks into song with Brendan Gleeson, his beautiful Irish voice. And it's just, it works.
I rather enjoyed the Liam Neeson one, the second one, I believe.
Yes.
He has this guy who has no arms and no legs. And he puts on this little show.
He's a Shakespearean actor.
So, and Liam Neeson is carrying him around. And it turns out that a chicken that can pick numbers off of a board. When people call out a number and the chicken will peck the number 22, or the chicken can do math. That's what the chicken can do.
Yeah.
And the chicken who can do math makes more money
than the guy without the arms and legs.
Yeah. Anyway.
doesn't have as good a union. Yeah.
So you both, this is peak Coen Brothers, would you say?
I think it's very good Coen Brothers. It was initially thought of as like a Western anthology series on Netflix, and instead it's...
They reconceived it as an anthology film.
Exactly.
The Ballad of Buster Scruggs from Ethan and Joel Coen, the writer-directors of the R-rated film with a terrific cast. It's at the Landmark this weekend in West L.A., and then starting next Friday, it'll be streaming on Netflix, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. We have much more to come on Air Talk. Our Film Week critics are joining us with a few reviews, and we keep you updated on the Woolsey fire. More to come in a moment.
KPCC podcast supporters include UCLA's Center for the Art of Performance, presenting LA's Uncabaret, celebrating 25 years with this one-time-only evening of live comedy, music, and never-before-seen footage from the vault. Featuring Beth Lapidus, Julia Sweeney, Janine Garofalo, Bob Odenkirk, Greg Barron, and Jill Soloway. Also featuring Maria Bamford, Julie Goldman, Byron Bowers, Justin Sayer, and surprise guests. Tickets at cap.ucla.edu. KPCC podcasts are supported by the Netflix film The Other Side of the Wind. Witness the last film from legendary director Orson Welles, The Other Side of the Wind, the story of a director named J.J. Jake Hannaford, who returns to Hollywood from years of semi-exile in Europe with plans to complete work on his own innovative comeback movie, also entitled The Other Side of the Wind, a cinematic event 40 years in the making. The Other Side of the Wind, now streaming only on Netflix.
You're listening to a special edition of Air Talk as we cover the Woolsey fire. With any additional information, we will be bringing it to you as we have tens of thousands of Southern Californians under mandatory evacuation, flames encroaching on Westlake Village, on Malibu Lake. The entire city of Malibu is under a mandatory evacuation, and Pacific Coast Highway is bumper to bumper with people sitting in traffic. If you have an opportunity to call us and to share your experience, if you are within the vicinity of the fire and you can safely give us an account of what you're seeing, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. You can also tweet at AirTalk, or you can post on our AirTalk page. I'm looking at Broad Beach right now, video in Malibu. It is as dark. It is as though it is midnight. It is so black. All you see are the taillights of the vehicles and a blur of the palm trees as the flames in their intensity are coming down toward Broad Beach in Malibu. Earlier, we talked with a Malibu resident who lived right on the beach at Broad Beach, who had evacuated and made it to the San Fernando Valley. But at this point, the evacuation area is Zuma Beach, at least for a temporary. You need to get there to Zuma Beach as the fire is roaring down. Again, it is an orange black glow at Broad Beach in Malibu. As we have additional details, we will bring it to you. Let's continue with our reviews with Overlord, an action horror film directed by Julius Avery. It's written by Mark L. Smith and Billy Ray. Tim?
And the J.J. Abrams Bad Robot team are behind this. You ever heard of James Avery? You haven't. You know why? Because he's never made a significant film before, and you can kind of tell. He made one other feature and a whole bunch of shorts. This film starts off as a sort of World War II action drama. And that stuff is put together really well. You have these paratroopers, and they're flying over Germany, and they're going to jump out. And all of that's very, very intense, and they do, and a few of them make it. One interesting thing in this film, in the context of World War II and this movie, the armed services are integrated. So you have all these black and white soldiers together in this. I thought that was an interesting choice. Now, where are we going with all of this? We're going to zombies is where we're going. We got to get to some zombies.
Integrated zombies. Yeah,
yeah. Which is sort of interesting. You know, Nazi zombies. I mean, they're already Nazis. You got to zombify them, too. But I just wish the dumb would have happened sooner in this movie. It keeps being a real serious World War II film for way too long. And then the dumb starts to happen. Bring that dumb in the second act, and this would be a way better movie.
Overlord is the film. It's in wide release. It's rated R. In a Relationship, a comedic drama starring Emma Roberts, Michael Ungarano, and Dree Hemingway. It's written and directed by Sam Boyd. Tim?
Actually, this is one of my more favorite movies of the week. This neat little relationship movie. So you have these two couples. One of them have been together for a little bit of time. They're all only about 25 years old. So when they say a long relationship, it's like 5 years, you know. But they've been together for a while, and things are going a little stale for them. His best friend meets her best friend, and they start a new relationship. Now, that's what's interesting about this movie, how the dynamic works between a fresh relationship and what's going on there, and how the dynamic works between one that's getting a little stale and they might need to take a break, and we watch these things go back and forth. And I found it sort of captivating and engaging and really funny. I like that it's set all over L.A., and L.A. really plays a character in this movie. Some of the places that we're talking about today, relationships to those fires, are all over this movie. It's a movie for people who are about this age and about going and just about to go into these sort of the things that these kids talk about in this movie that they find very, very serious made me laugh because I'm thinking to myself, when you're married 30 years, that's going to seem so dumb. But, you know, they have to go through it first. And I rather enjoyed it for that reason. Yeah.
In a Relationship, comedic drama, Emma Roberts, Michael Ungarano star, unrated. It's at the Vintage Los Feliz Theater in Los Feliz. The Delinquent Season is an Anglo-Irish co-production. The drama stars Andrew Scott, Killian Murphy. It's written and directed by Mark O'Rourke. Claudia.
Well, this is what those couples are going to be talking about 15
yeah.
years later.
Yeah.
Because this is about two couples and friendships and the interrelationships that happen with these two couples. And I think it really nicely captured the fragile nature of relationships in our modern times. And the characters were human. They were engaging. It's not that we couldn't necessarily see things coming, but the way in which it was revealed to us and the way it was slightly different. And instead of actually seeing it coming, you would see maybe the after effects of it, as opposed to, you know, going, oh, and then this is going to happen. And it felt a bit like a play and a little bit like a novel. Mm-hmm. It had a very literary kind of unspooling and... I actually liked it. Killian Murphy is really good in it. I thought that it was set in Dublin, so that made it slightly different. But sort of the everydayness of events that occur between couples when you're married and how it takes such little drama to really, show some the fabric of something just kind of coming apart and disintegrating.
Great sweeping moments of wonderful dramatic dialogue and these sort of like scenes that these guys can really play. Look, there's one thing that you know is going to happen in this movie, this couple. There's going to be an affair. And if the movie was only about that affair, then the movie wouldn't be interesting. But it's not. The movie is about every other thing that happens after that affair. And it's piercing in that way.
Yeah.
Movie's The Delinquent Season, an Anglo-Irish co-production. It's unrated at the Arena Cine Lounge Sunset in Hollywood. El Angel is an Argentinian film that's at the Landmark New Art in West Los Angeles, directed and co-written by Luis Ortega. Claudia.
This is based on an actual crime or series of crimes that occurred in the 1970s, early 1970s. And Carlitos he looks like an angel. He's very cherubic. He's got this beautiful kind of Roger Daltrey head of curls. He's attractive, and he is a serial killer. And so it's a bit of a shallow portrayal of him, but then he's a shallow character. Argentina apparently is fascinated by him because this was the highest grossing film in history in Argentina.
Wow.
And it's so his name was Carlos Pobledo Puch. And he's been in prison for 46 years. And he mostly committed these crimes when he was 19 and started out with robberies and then they got worse and worse. And he's amoral. It's, you know, natural born killer kind of thing, but it's very stylistic. And it's an interesting exploration of what was going on in Argentina in the early 70s as well, the backdrop of that.
Yeah.
And it's very well acted. And also, it kind of makes you think about how virtue is often associated with beauty.
Mm. El Angel, the Argentinian film, New Art Theater, West L.A. Lorenzo Ferro is the star of the film. It's unrated. I want to take a brief moment to bring in listener Alex in Bell Canyon. Alex, what's the update in your community?
Thank you. We just evacuated. We're actually taking some of our horses out, community horses, from the equestrian center to Hanson Dam.
Okay, so they're evacuating all of Bell Canyon now in the West San Fernando Valley?
Yes, yes. Entire community is being evacuated, and we're the neighbors are actually going around to ensure that everyone is aware and everyone is evacuating. We have probably 20 to 25 engine trucks in there, fire engine trucks in the canyon.
All right, Alex, thank you for the update on Bell Canyon, where I know we have a number of listeners. We're talking about the devastation of the Woolsey Fire. Should we be able to bring our critics back to talk about some more films in the next hour, we will do that. But, of course, we want to keep you updated on the Woolsey Fire, absolutely everything that's happening with that right now, the evacuations and the homes that are burning. We'll be back momentarily. Firefighters are attempting to protect homes in communities like Westlake Village, Malibu, and Agoura Hills. There are homes that are burning right now in Malibu. There are water and phoscheck drops, the fire retardant trying to protect many of those areas. But, of course, the size of this fire, the Woolsey Fire, more than 14,000 acres, it's so big they just simply can't have fire lines in all of the locations. L.A. County Sheriff's Department just tweeted a traffic advisory to all residents evacuating. Continue to use two lanes on CHP, as we just heard from the public safety officer for Malibu. They're trying to flip lanes on Coast Highway so that more southbound traffic can be accommodated out of the community. We'll keep you updated as we continue with our special coverage. But we also want to give you some film reviews on our Friday Film Week. I know you count on that and you tune in for that. I promise you, as we have more information on the Woolsey Fire, we will bring it to you. But let's take a moment to hear about Liz and the Blue Bird, a new Japanese animated film that's directed by Naoko Yamada. Charles, what'd you think?
Well, one of the many subgenres of anime is the shoujo or girls series. And this is about Mizori and Nozomi, two musicians who are in the school concert band. They're best friends. But when they have to play some music relating to a fairy tale of Liz and the Bluebird, their problems and their conflicts really come to the fore. That one of them is very shy and, frankly, kind of dreary. She plays the oboe. She identifies with the hardworking Liz in the fairy tale. The other is the flautist, who's outgoing and cheery, and she's the bluebird who represents freedom. The problem is the characters aren't terribly interesting. This is one of a series of spin-offs of a TV series, and if you don't know this series, the characters are going to seem underdeveloped and a bit dull. And when we've had some recent features that dealt with teenage angst and relationship problems in much more interesting ways, like A Silent Voice and, of course, Your Name, this really kind of pales by comparison. If you're fans of the show, which is something Harmonium, it's an odd name, you'll probably enjoy it. If not, it's a little pallid and a little vapid, I think.
Liz and the Blue Bird from director Naoko Yamada is in selected theaters this week and next. The Japanese anime film is unrated. Searching for Ingmar Bergman, a new German documentary, which is directed by Margarita von Trotta. Claudia, what do you think of her latest film?
I liked it quite a lot. It's the 100th anniversary of his birth. And so to take an already international, for an internationally renowned director to talk about her own personal reaction to Ingmar Bergman, and then to talk to this circle of collaborators, as well as a new generation of filmmakers, some of his family, it's a very impressionistic and personal work. It's not, I don't think, the definitive look at him, but there have been those. So I don't think we needed that. This is more about remembrances and personal feelings that are kind of engendered by his films. And you know, having worked with him, Liv Ullmann is featured, Carlos Sauda, so many filmmakers, including Olivier Assayas, people from all over the world for whom Bergman was a big influence. I loved it. I thought it was really good.
Me too. Kind of interesting in a couple of ways. When we think about the Nouvelle Vague, Chabrol and Truffaut and all of those guys, and we make the association that they had with American cinema, Hitchcock, Ford, all of that. The other association that they had, the thing that they found fascinating, was Bergman. So, yes, they were biting American cinema, but they were wrapping it in this sort of Bergman-esque sort of fabric. And it's really sort of amazing. And you're right. There's a lot of filters here. She knew him. She knew Liv Ullmann. She was an actress and was working during that period. But it also sort of peels back many of the layers about his sort of personal life mm-hmm. and the way he worked. We look at books and scripts where he wrote his notes all in the margins and everything that he was doing. We find out that he was actually incredibly insecure about his work, and not a particularly good father.
Not a particularly good father. In fact, at one point he said he really missed working with his actors, and one of his children says, well, don't you miss being with your children? No. Why don't you say that? Because I don't, is what he said.
And this is particularly interesting in the context of his work, much of which is about his father and priest and religion,
childhood.
His childhood and all that kind of stuff. So we looking at this explains a lot about a whole lot of those movies.
Wow. Searching for Ingmar Bergman. And does Von Trotta share a lot about herself as an artist?
She does. She talks about the first time she saw Seventh Seal, and particularly the scene that really, like, where she realized that film could be art. Mm. It was that film that did it for her.
And she talks about being influenced by people. People would always say, oh, well, you know, you did that in your movie because Bergman. And she's like, you know, it's not that I was doing Bergman. It's that Bergman had infested everything. We were all doing Bergman, whether we wanted to or not. And she's absolutely right. You didn't have to try to bite Bergman. It's the way films are made.
She's very warm-hearted, too. And she has a very kind of friendly manner so that when she's talking to other filmmakers, you really feel like this is somebody who's intimately kind of, you know, like you're overhearing conversations, mm. which is a really nice
We're feeling. Talking about the director, Margaretha von Trotta, who does this documentary on Ingmar Bergman, Searching for Ingmar Bergman. You can see it at Lemley's Royal Theater in West L.A., as well as in Irvine at the Edwards West Park Cinema. The film is unrated. By the way, I'm sure you recognize their voices, but I neglected to tell you that was Tim Cogshell and Claudia Puig and Charles Solomon, our Film Week critics, joining us. Coming up, we'll continue with our live coverage of the Woolsey Fire, 14,000 acres in size. There are homes that are burning, structures that are burning in Malibu. We've heard in Agoura Hills as well. And now the evacuation area is extending. We'll continue with our coverage. You can join us at 866-893-5722. If you are in the evacuation zone or recently evacuated, please share with us your experience moving out of your community. We'll be back in 1 minute.